Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. We have a new whiskey to review. It is Basil Hayden's Dark Rye. If you're watching it, that's what it looks like. Buddy of mine, Riley Nesbola, one of my buddies from the comedy scene, borrowed my truck, and I gave him the keys and said, "Hey, here you go." And he said, "Here's a bottle of whiskey." So this was a gift from my buddy Riley. It's like I said, Basil Hayden Dark Rye. I like it.
So for rye,
right? Which we have not been kind to rye in the past on the show.
And rye
is not my style, really.
Well, right, and bourbons, rye bourbons aren't particularly my favorite unless I'm drinking them in an old fashioned,
okay,
or a Manhattan, in a high end Manhattan or old fashioned.
Right.
So, you know, that's it, because typically the reason why you would use a rye there is it dampens down some of the sweetness. It's just drier in and of itself.
Okay.
And then you're using...
And you're also overcoming the flavor with the vermouth and the cherry juice.
Right. I mean, you're using vermouth. You're using cherries. You're using orange and sugar and things like that, whether it's old-fashioned or Manhattan. And those sort of things, you want those flavors to be caught with and blend well with the whiskey, and they tend to do that a little bit better with a rye than they do with the straight up whiskey, because and a lot of times when people make Manhattans or they make old fashions, they use Canadian whiskey, and that's because Canadians a lot of times use rye or make theirs in rye fashion. So
this is different than most ryes that we've had. It's got I don't know, is it a caramel or a toffee?
Right.
Finish?
So I say. I came out and I was like, oh, because they're not so sweet. But this one has a sweetness
to
it. I definitely pick up the caramel and the toffee. And there's a hint of some other like fruit flavors in there on the back end. And it doesn't overpower you. It's not, Basil
Hayden. It's an 80 proof.
Right.
So it's not.
Right. So it's not going to knock you out of the park with alcohol or burn or anything like that. And the flavor is generally pretty good. I actually don't really pick up on the rye much at all, and maybe that's because the impact of what makes it so dark and mysterious.
Whatever, yeah, but I gave it a 90.
And I'm there with you.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to tick it down 1 point. It's an 89 for me.
Okay.
And that's only just because it just doesn't have...
And it's a 40 proof, right?
Doesn't have a punch.
Above 40, under 40, or say 40 proof and below, loses a spot, loses a point with you.
Right.
Steve deducts a point for lack of kick.
I do.
Yeah,
I mean, I just
right.
like...
That's what you like. What you like.
Right.
You like the burn.
I like
the controlled burn.
Right.
But anyway, so thanks, Riley. We like it a lot, and... thanks for getting my truck back in one piece. Riley, by the way, every time he introduces me at an open mic or a showcase, he says, co-host of Whiskey Congress Podcast. So he always throws.
So outstanding.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Well, appreciate it, Riley. Whiskey was solid. So if you're watching this on YouTube, we are going to go ahead and shut the video down. But please check out the podcast at whiskeycongress.com. And then if you're listening to the podcast, obviously it's not over. We have some other things to talk about. 4th of July, LeBron James leaving, Alex Jones in the second Civil War. I need to make a correction on the Supreme Court statements that I made last week. And then obviously come at me, bro, at the end. So
And Scott Pruitt. You have
to, oh, yeah.
And Scott Pruitt's
right.
departure.
I just glazed right over that.
We've given up on our Deadpool because it was just too fast and furious. But all right, so there was your whiskey review. Thanks, Riley. It's 4th of July. I had a good one. I went back up to Buffalo. How was your 4th?
It was good, man. Spent it with the family. We did a fair amount of whiskey drinking, bourbon. Not a lot of drinking, but we had a couple nips.
I did almost none.
Ugh. Wow. Shame
on
you.
I was with the non-drinking portion of the family.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, me and my dad had a couple different... It was tough, though, because it was hot. You know, I mean, it was just...
This was not whiskey weather.
Right, no, it was not.
Not straight whiskey weather.
I mean, I made the mistake. I smoked... I just needed a little bit of a separation from the family for a little bit. So I took a cigar outside and I lit it up and I'm like, God damn it, it's 98 degrees out here. And I'm sitting there and the sun is just hot. I'm under an umbrella, but it didn't matter because it was just so hot. Like, you couldn't escape it. And I realized I had made a mistake, but the cigar that I lit up was a Liga Privada T52, which is, you know, a solid stick, and I couldn't let it go, so I had to finish it, and I was just...
powering through.
Oh, I powered through it, and I was so hot and so sweaty, it was ridiculous, but, all in all, it was a good holiday.
Good.
Ate a lot of good food, brought some back with me, so...
Nice. Yeah. I went to Buffalo, went on my cousin's boat, went to another cousin's house on Lake Erie, I was sweating up a storm as well, I had my clothes just pasted to me by the end of the day. But one thing about, as polarized as we are as a country now, almost no political discussion at the family event. I'm known as the, gun-toting liberal in the family. Most of that part of the family is very conservative.
Just a weird phrase, by the way.
Was it gun-toting liberal?
Gun-toting liberal.
Yeah, I didn't make it up. Someone else called me that. But I think everyone just knows we are so polarized right now. Let's just leave it alone. Which in some ways is bad, but in a lot of ways is a good thing probably because it didn't result in, shouting matches, arguments, and
shunning.
And So anyway, but I did find that it changed the dynamic of, normally these things would have a political element, especially when I show up, and none, not a bit.
Yeah, I mean, obviously my family's a little bit more of the same thought process to a certain degree,
right? And so my family is very polarized.
Yeah,
and I'm known for my political views. So, right.
So
anyway,
not a lot of that there.
But. Yeah. So good Fourth. Happy birthday, America. Did you hear what our buddy Alex Jones had to say?
You know,
Steve.
You know damn well I
did. I know you did. I know you did.
You know
the liberals,
damn well I
George
did.
Soros, is trying to form the forces. All right, I'll stop with the impersonation for now, but. Alex Jones predicted that liberals were trying to spark a second civil war on July 4th. And actually, he got some flack from Joe Rogan, and he claimed Joe Rogan was bought out by the globalists. So that was funny to me to hear Joe Rogan respond to.
Yeah.
But here's what's impressive to me about saying that the liberals being driven by the globalist agenda are going to start a second civil war on the 4th of July. Mm-hmm. That is so specific. What these guys usually live on is a vague, there's a threat out there, the evil liberals are out there, and it's coming someday. And someday it's going to happen, so you need to stay on guard. But when you put a timestamp on it, you, in theory, put your credibility on the line. And Alex Jones just does not need credibility.
No, he punted on that a long time ago. Come on.
I know. But isn't that a symptom of how far we've gone in terms of, like, not, the boy, when you're the boy who cried wolf 550 times, and then you, all right,
I mean, Jim, this is the same guy who was talking about gay frogs, and he's seen the fish people.
Fair.
I mean, come on.
He cried about seeing the fish. All right.
You know what?
I don't know why I'm trying to hold this to a higher standard or hold this. I've seen the fish people. I guess those are unverifiable things, though, right? Joe Schmo can't. That's not true.
Did you actually listen to his explanation of what was going to happen?
You know, I did as I was writing something, and I don't remember any specific details. I think it
so. What they did was it got a lot of action on Twitter, and I took the liberty of jumping in on that, and I'll explain that in a second. But what he said and what they said on InfoWars. Was that the headline was, Democrats and the progressive left are going to start the second civil war. And his explanation was that the progressive left and Democrats were going to use July 4th as a day to launch aggressive propaganda against the conservative GOP and Donald Trump. And they were going to spread a message to, resist Donald Trump at all costs. using, and he basically took Maxine Waters' rhetoric and said that that was the game plan for the progressive left going forward to attack Trump and the GOP, and that this was essentially the second, the beginning of the second Civil War.
Okay, so he wasn't anticipating a verifiable
event. So it was what you thought, but I mean, they use this giant headline to do exactly what it did, to draw a lot of attention. But I mean, obviously, anyone with any sort of common sense thought it was hilarious. So on the 4th of July, there was a hashtag going around.
Civil War letters. Second Civil War letters.
Second Civil War letters. And so I took the liberty to jump in and write one for us.
Very good.
And it read, "My dearest Norma Jean, the battle rages on as we take respite to tend to the wounded. My iTunes account is running low, and we've watched all of both Luke Cage and Jessica Jones. While weary, we will forge ahead. Rest easy. Be home soon. Send nudes."
Hashtag. You know, I saw that.
Hashtag second Civil War letters.
So. All right. Send nudes. Which, it is funny when you write, not funny, but when you read letters from the Civil War, and they are, you know, eloquent letters from guys on the front lines to their loved ones back home. Mm-hmm. They're very powerful and whatever.
Right.
And well, you know, I think you did capture that plus what would happen with send nudes.
So a lot, you know, on more than one occasion, I've gotten into Twitter back and forth with people who, on both sides, whether it's conservatives or progressives, that say, you know, everything is devolving, and we're going to slip into another civil war. It's coming. Look, these two guys fought in a grocery store parking lot. So obviously, the next thing to come is civil war, right? Like, and they point to these, you know, anecdotal incidents of people arguing over politics, where, you know, the one guy was trying to tell me that because a guy in a Denny's took a MAGA hat off a guy and threw a drink in his face, that this is the breakdown of civilization, and eventually, like, the next obvious step is civil war. You're blind if you don't see it. You know, they point to some more serious things. You know, they point to Charlottesville and, you know, oh, that's going to lead to, so, like, listen, I'm sorry, but a deranged, you know, post-teenager, I think the guy was like 19 or 20, you know, who drove from Toledo to Charlottesville and drives his car into some people. If you think that that's going to set off a civil war, when, like, listen, if it was going to spark a civil war, then you would have thought it would have happened then in the moment, right? Like, you think we're going to go back a year and a half later and just be like, you know what? Because of that, we're about to set this bitch off. Like,
I always say, who actually fights who? I mean,
well, that's the question.
Unrest, but to be a civil war, there has to be, like,
a defined group,
troops, and right? Not.
Well, and the other thing is, I mean, there's what a lot of people doing is they're redefining what civil war means to fit what's happening in the United States right now, right? So what they're saying is, well, you may not get a North versus South, or you may not get a liberal versus Democrat, or a liberal versus conservative. Or conservative per se, but, you know, like, you're already seeing some issues where, you know, you have all this division and you're seeing different groups clash. So, you know, what you'll have is pockets of, you know, feminists versus whoever, right? I don't know who their exact enemy would be.
Anyone related to Trump.
You know, and then all the minorities are upset. So they're going to just start fighting white people in certain places. And just, like, all this sort of, like they're trying to redefine, you know, or they're trying to take the word civil war, the phrase civil war, and fit it over what's happening in the United States. And then as soon as there's enough hubbub and turmoil, they can say, see, we told you it was coming. And I don't see it that way. People are really just genuinely too self-absorbed, too lazy, too physically out of shape to engage in civil. I mean, just like, I mean, if you think about what it would take to get, a small percentage of people have guns, and most of the people who have guns have...
it's not that small a percentage. I think it's like 30%.
There's a shit ton of guns out there, but it's a small percentage of the overall U.S. population who actually owns them. And most of those people generally have the same fucking viewpoint.
Right.
So,
I mean, no one from Missouri is going to march to New Jersey and take on.
Right. I mean, it's just like, no, like, I mean, come on. I mean, most of these people, I mean, everyone's so obsessed with, you know, just their lot in life, you know? I mean,
right.
Figuring out how to make ends meet, making money, feeding their kids, spending time with their families, drinking, you know, working, whatever it is. I mean, like, everyone has their own shit to the point where to get people to the point where they're going to go over the edge and get off the couch, it's just not going to happen, right? I mean, it's just not. I mean, even your people who work blue collar.
The Second Civil War, we fought on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of my point, right? I mean, people get pissed off at me and they're just like, oh, but these two people fought in public. Like, okay, that was a fucking titty slap fight. You know, I mean, like, I'm sorry. Like, oh, no, that's violence. Like, no, that's what I'm talking about. You think that's violence. You're a fucking pussy, right? Like, you wouldn't know violence if it fucking hit you in the face. Me punching you in the face and making you bleed and making you go, like, lights out unconscious, that's violence. You don't know that. You've never experienced it from your fucking couch or from your lectern or from your office or whatever wherever you're tweeting from. Right, like, I mean, people don't understand what violence is.
But then again, like you brought up earlier, we did have some guy run a car into a crowd of people. That is violence. I mean,
that is not a civil war. And the reaction is people fucking cried. People didn't march. I mean, they didn't drag that guy out of his car and beat the shit out of him. Like, they're just like, oh my God, where are the police? Like, what's going on? Like, oh my God, this is so scary, right? And that's maybe the appropriate response, but that's not the response of the people that are about to uprise and revolt and tear the country apart.
Agreed. And anytime Alex Jones says something really stupid, I just take pleasure in calling it out. All right, so you wanted to say something about last week's show.
Give me a quick second,
okay?
Because I actually, you don't have to pause.
All right, so we were talking about the Supreme Court. We're talking about Justice Anthony Kennedy stepping down, and you made a comment to me as we were preparing that there was something you wanted to correct. I'm trying to buy you time.
Yeah, just keep going.
All right, keep going. And we need to get through that because I can't wait to talk about my buddy Scott Pruitt.
Actually, how about this? Why don't we jump to
Scott Pruitt?
Jump to Scott Pruitt.
Okay. So Scott Pruitt stepped down from his role as head of the EPA today, even though he's the most environment-hating person ever. And, well, maybe not, because he's been under constant scrutiny, right? He's apparently been using his position to curry favor. He's been running up overpriced trips and basically spitting in the face of the concept of responsible use of citizens' money. He's now under investigation potentially for federal crimes, and he stepped down citing the hostile environment that he and his family have been subjected to. Mind you, he was a lobbyist for the coal and energy industry, which is an awkward precursor to becoming head of the EPA, which is designed, if you don't know, EPA stands for Environmental Protection Agency, not Environmental Utilization Energy Agency. He's being replaced by a guy, what's his name, is Andrew Webster, who is a lobbyist for the coal industry.
Right.
He's thought to be more hostile to the environment and more anti- less of a believer in climate change and its impact to us.
And the thing about it, though, is that if Pruitt wasn't such an idiot, like, he would still be an. I mean, he would, like, his everything that
Trump
he's
loved
done.
Him.
Like, I mean, what he's not leaving. He's not being ousted, or I mean, I'm sure one. It was probably a forced resignation, but.
I think he just couldn't take it anymore.
The reason he's leaving is because of the amount of investigation that he's under, right? For the dumb things that, I mean, having people find his wife a job, having people find him a condo, having people
staying in a $5,000 a month condo.
The other one is having someone find him a way to get Chick-fil-A franchise.
I didn't remember that one.
Yeah,
get me a Chick-fil-A franchise,
right? Like,
is delicious. I will never stop saying
I love Chick-fil-A. I mean, I know
their political views, whatever.
Their political views suck.
Their food is delicious.
I hate to eat there because our gay friends and the gay community.
One of my gay friends eats there all the time, and he's given me
the go-ahead, the green light.
It's Cody. Cody Brown.
Right.
He eats a Chick-fil-A all the time. They really like chicken, okay?
Right. I mean, it is hard to. I love Chick-fil-A, but I mean, I could tell them that their views are wrong and still eat their food.
And their food is fantastic.
Hypocritical. It's awful, but I'm gonna have to own it. It is what it is. But
bigotry apparently is delicious. What can I say?
That's the type of shit though that has this guy resigning, and so what I'm saying is it's not a policy issue, right? So the guy stepping in for him is probably not, like, I mean, he's a lobbyist,
he's a coal guy.
I mean, he sit there and he's watched Scott Pruitt basically burn himself to the ground. So chances are this guy's going to get in there. We're not going to hear a word from him, and the next thing you know, you're going to be able to just dump your old gasoline in your neighbor's bathtub or sink or fucking kitchen sink, and it won't make a difference, right? I mean, because the way that they're going after these regulations with the EPA, the agency is not going to exist. I mean,
yeah,
it's almost like we know that they want it. They basically want it to go away, because if you get rid of the EPA, then that gives a lot of a lot of your manufacturing and that gives them back their ability.
It gives
them to produce.
Well,
cheaper.
Cheaper. I was going to say, thank you. It obviously regulations and environmental protections cost money. I get it. I understand why companies don't like, being told, here's how you have to dispose of this, and here's how you have to dispose of that, and you can't use more of whatever. In the short term, companies make more money. In the long term, the environment suffers. We live in Cleveland. The Cuyahoga River once caught fire because of irresponsible industrial practices. I think we can all agree that a river catching fire is a bad thing. If I'm overstepping my bounds there, tweet at me or whatever.
The only good thing about it is that we got Burning
River. We do get Burning River AL from Great Lakes Brewing, so yes. So maybe it was all worth it, Steve. Well, maybe, but no, really, it's, yes, it sucks if you're trying to manufacture and you think you're being, forced into spending more money than you should, but just because you're trying to manufacture something doesn't give you the right to poison the rest of the country. And,
and there is, for the black community and this president, there's a lot of backlash from African Americans towards President Trump. Now we're seeing a little uptick in some people, some black conservatives that are really starting to push for Trump, and they claim that they're walking away from the Democratic Party and they're walking into Trump's open arms and all that other
right.
shit. But which is fine, and I'm kind of neutral on it because I just like the Democratic Party to me is only turning me off more and more with their inability to figure out a game plan, right? The only thing that they're really standing on is resist.
Right.
Resist Trump. And it's not productive. We have the situation with immigration. They're not presenting any sort of good solutions. All they're creating
political strife to make the other guys look bad is right. not a solution. Yes, it's been done to you for a long time. That doesn't make it right to do it back.
Exactly.
It doesn't help America. Though, how is the black community reacting to these affirmative action?
Before we even go there, though, what I was going to say about the black community is that by tearing down really tearing at the strength of the EPA to do its job and enforce environmental protections, it does a lot of damage to the black community because a lot of your black communities are centered around manufacturing areas, either old or current manufacturing areas, and those are the communities in these inner cities or they're near plants, they're near steel mill. Like if you look at the way Cleveland is configured, if you look at the way Chicago is configured, you look at these places and you look at who lives where. And you look at kind of what's around it, Like, you start peeling back what, you know, the restrictions, and you start getting rid of those restrictions on what happens, what these places can do and how they can impact the environment, then that's the community that feels the brunt of it, right? Their kids and their water gets poisoned, their ground gets poisoned.
Flint, Michigan still has a problem.
Right, exactly.
It's not on the news anymore.
Right,
but they still do not have safe drinking water in Flint, Michigan, or at least lots of it.
Right, and I mean, and you know, by attacking the EPA the way this administration has, that is the end result, and that's where there's not a lot that Donald Trump has done where I can say that's racist, right? I mean, the thing with the NFL, and he's said plenty of things.
He's used a lot of trigger words and catchphrases.
He's said plenty of things, and you know, and people forget that Donald Trump said this, but Donald Trump back in 2014 said that there'll never be another black president again because Barack Obama ruined it, right?
I don't remember that.
I do remember it. It's a tweet. He said it back in 2014. I can pull it up for you right now.
I'm not doubting
you. No, I know. I'm saying, like, he said that, and the idea, like, I mean, you like, you can't look, I mean, you can sit there and say he's not racist. Like, that's a pretty racist fucking comment. To say, and you know, we've seen other things that he's done in his past that lead us to believe that you know what, I don't think he's a fan of black people all that much, right? Like, I mean, you could put a picture of him with Jesse Jackson or whoever, but I mean, I can also show you counterpoints to that.
So picture which him one, with Hillary Clinton,
right? I mean, there's plenty of people who say that they're not racist, right? I mean, Donald Sterling owned a fucking basketball team, and he owned a basketball team, and the girl that he was with was some sort of whatever, and he's still an asshole. So
he's an asshole. We've gone through this too many times, and it's too far in the past to go down that road. But he said it was okay for her to bang black guys. Just don't embarrass me in front of my country club buddies. I don't know if he was so much a racist as a narcissistic douche. But
okay,
again, we've all right.
Right. Don't.
We're gonna go down a bad path if we keep. You see what I'm saying? I'm like, for a guy to tell his girlfriend, go ahead and fuck black guys. Just don't make everyone know that that's happening, because I'm out here as an old, wrinkly, disgusting white guy who just happens to have a shit ton of money trying to brag about how you're my piece of ass. That's my point.
Okay. I don't think you remember that full phone call, though.
Okay, what am I?
He
said some horrible stuff, but in that
that was directly related. I mean, that was directly related to race, like what he was calling the black.
I don't remember him dropping.
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Anyway.
I mean, we could skip over that part if you want.
All right.
So anyway, way off the beaten path here, but the whole point is the EPA has an impact on people, and stripping away their ability to do their job has a direct and specific impact on people of color that live in those regions. On everyone, by the way. Anyone who lives in those regions, whether you're in Appalachia and it's mostly white, or if it's a, you know, a bigger urban city with manufacturing, but it ultimately, really, I shouldn't be dividing this by race. It's going to have a disparate impact on poor people.
Right.
Right. That's who it's going to have an impact on. And we got a hell of a lot of poor people that are people of color, but there's also a hell of a lot of poor people that are white as well. So it's really more of a class issue and a money issue, but ultimately that's who it's going to impact. And we got a lot of those people in this country who are going to be impacted by it. So that's why keeping the EPA around and fully
and doing its job and protecting, you know, the right, environment, and yes,
is important.
You know, today before I drove home from Buffalo, my cousin and I drove by the Solar City, aka Tesla plant in Buffalo. And it was for me, you know how I feel about solar and green energy. And there's a huge facility, and, you know, parking lot full of cars. It's right by a couple miles from where I spent most of my youth. And to see a huge Tesla plant there is great. And then to think we have an administration and people within it who think the answer is coal, because pulling a rock out of the ground that burns is the future of this country's energy problems. It's like, just depressing to me as an environmentalist and a technology guy. If you let me go down the road,
we don't need to do that.
But the Tesla plant was really cool looking. I mean,
I'm sure. I'd be curious to see it, take a tour.
I got to tell you a funny thing. So my cousin is take you know driving me around, and he says, and there's the Tesla plant, and based on the angle I had, he's pointing to an old house. And I'm like, that's not what I was expecting. And, if I look half a mile down the road, just there's a massive plant with Tesla written. I'm like, okay, that's impressive. Macro that old house. Mansion. Yeah, exactly. Macro it was the way he pointed, I chose a reasonable vantage point and was initially not impressed.
Right.
All right.
So, the Supreme Court thing. Okay, so the Supreme Court edit. You know, last week I was telling you that I firmly believe that, you know, all the Democrats will vote in line with each other to, you know, block Trump's Supreme Court nomination. And I think I got caught up in the moment because afterwards I went back and I said, no, I said that. But, you know, what was the actual vote for Neil Gorsuch, right? In the vote for Neil Gorsuch, there were three Democrats who voted for him that allowed him to get confirmed, and that was Joe Manchin of West Virginia, your boy, as you stated, who said was a real possibility that he could vote in favor of Trump's nominee, Joe Donnelly of Indiana, and then Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota. They all voted for Neil Gorsuch. Now, I could make an argument for a couple of them that, you know, Neil Gorsuch was a reasonable pick.
I would agree with
all
that.
Things considered. So, you know, maybe they didn't see the need to be obstructionist. You know, Joe Manchin, as you said, you know, he has
to pander
right.
so hard to the right, or so hard to the pro-Trump folks while trying to maintain his Democratic credentials. I mean, that's
right.
a difficult.
I mean, yeah, and so act. I mean, and the reality is. I don't see, I mean, I think, I got caught up in the moment, but sitting back and looking at it, it's going to be very hard for the left to block this Supreme Court nomination. I mean, it's just going to be hard for them to, you know, I mean, like, you're going to need to keep everybody on your side, so you're going to need to keep these three people on your side.
Right.
And then you're going to need to pull two people from the other side,
yep.
from the Republicans, over to your side to make sure that the vice president can't break the tie.
But back to your point, the goal should not be to resist the nominee. The goal should be to assess the nominee.
Agreed.
And I know you agree. And the whole idea that we're going to block this guy, or when Mitch McConnell said we're going to confirm the guy, why not wait to see who it is, whether it is even a guy? It could be a woman. In fact,
the nominee
should be, you shouldn't be deciding what you're going to do with the nominee until you know who the nominee is. I mean, my favorite example of disrespecting the Supreme Court from the nomination process was George Bush nominating Harriet Myers, who was his personal lawyer. You know, some people on the right jumped to the defense of that decision and said, she doesn't need to be a judge. But true. I'm not saying he broke the law, but he nominated a completely unqualified person based on personal friendship or whatever. And you should not be nominating Supreme Court justices on that principle. If you don't know the story, Google Harriet Myers, George Bush. Maybe, just maybe, Trump tries to, you know, curry favor, lure votes, push the, honestly, the smartest move I think Trump could make from a political standpoint would be to nominate a woman for this position and then make the Democrats either say, well, we're always calling for more, you know, more women on the Supreme Court. If we go against this one, we got the 2018 midterms coming up. I mean, Trump is already, I guess he's in Montana now going with John Tester's opponent. And John Tester is a moderate Democrat who I actually am kind of a fan of. I mean, he's an interesting guy. He's had run businesses and been a normal person. He was not a career politician. What do you think of that? I mean, what do you think of that? If he nominates a woman who is maybe, right leaning and maybe on the issue, you don't think it's a smart move? Or you don't think he'll do it?
I don't think he'll do it. I don't think it's actually the right play. I mean, I think at this point, Trump and his administration have a lot more support than I think anybody really You know, anyone that's objective or anyone on the left wants to admit at this point in time, he's got a lot of momentum. You can point to all, you can point to the tweets, you can point to North Korea, you can point to everything that people are using against him. But every time you do that, he gets more and more support from, you know, people that are on the fence in the middle who just aren't enamored with the progressiveness of the left. And so at this point, Trump's all in on playing the I'm a staunch conservative, right? He's all in on it. And there's no more I need to come back to the middle. Now he doesn't have to.
I agree with that.
So because he doesn't have to, he's fully in. And so his, you know, he has some legitimate staunch conservatives in his, you know, in his administration, you know, at his side and in his staff. And they're pushing, they're saying, listen, get the most conservative judges you can all the way from the appellate court all the way up to the Supreme Court. Like, why, like, screw it. Why waste it? It doesn't matter. They can't stop us. I would go, if I were him, just like, I'd go for broke and stack the court, stack it, you know, like, I mean, because realistically, we talked about it last week, he's going to have probably at least one more appointment before the end of his term, and that's me just being conservative and saying he only serves one term, right? Now, if he turns around and gets reelected, then you're probably guaranteed
that he'll get renamed to the Trump Court.
Well, right. But I mean, if he gets reelected and he does an 8-year term, then he's gonna name at the end of it all 4 Supreme Court justices, right?
Gorsuch, assuming there's no unforeseen things. I mean, right, Scalia, like, passed away suddenly. Yeah, he was an older guy, but nothing says that, you know,
Roberts can't, right, you know, or something along those lines. You know, Clarence Thomas trips and falls and breaks his neck or whatever. All those things are possible, but I mean, I think just through natural attrition, if he does all 8 years, then, you know, he's got Gorsuch, he's replacing Kennedy now. Theoretically, Ginsburg, you know, Ginsburg or Breyer, one of the people that we, you know, listed off that's over 80, he could be replacing them. And so, I mean, this is just the reality of
it.
Back to
the maxim of Steve, elections have consequences.
They do have consequences, and this is the price that you pay as a Democrat. And because they couldn't, not only did they lose, but the position that they took once they lost, which was, well, we're just gonna cry and resist and
talk about the electoral college
and
being...
scream and you know, really, and instead of really kind of bucking up and saying, all right, we got to get, instead of actually forming a strategy, they went the other way. They're gonna pay for it again, and I fear for the left and Democrats in November, when this doesn't go their way.
I agree with you on that.
I mean, because they
were started counting on, well, we're going to get the House back and maybe the Senate.
The blue wave.
You are spiking the ball at midfield.
They were spiking the ball at the wrong 30, you know, in my opinion. And I think that they're still disillusioned. You know, I think that some people are starting to come to grips with it and they're literally unraveling. But the reality is that the support for Trump is growing. And I
don't know. All right, go ahead.
I think it's definitely growing. It maybe not in massive amounts.
I need to work on my
amounts.
Poker face. When I react to your statements and people aren't watching us, it's like...
No, you know. I mean, listen, it may not be by 20% every week, but I think you're seeing incremental growth in his support. And incremental growth in his support is devastating for the Democrats because they needed him to absolutely lose support in order for them to gain the type of ground that they wanted to gain.
All right, so if I make the statement that a big part of that is that the media, mostly the I refuse to call some parts of the media left-leaning, but some of it is. And they spent so much time on Stormy Daniels and... you know, whatever, you know, his sex life and whatever, and not on policy, not on issues. And eventually Stormy Daniels may, you know, rear her head again. But I think we've proven that no one cares.
Right.
And so you spend all your time on, well, Stormy Daniels' lawyer's got this bombshell. Okay.
What bombshell does he have?
He's a porn star. We all know right. this. That's not shocking.
Just, right.
And me, I call myself a liberal. I don't think I fully fit the, you know, marching orders description. But most liberals I know don't give a fuck. And no conservatives I know, no Trump supporters I know give a fuck, except for the ones who say, well, good for him. He's fucking a porn star. So what a losing strategy. And it wasn't a Democratic Party strategy, but it was definitely how the media.
I mean, the media obviously leans left.
Who gives a fuck?
Right. I mean, and that was
bad choice of terms on my part, bro.
Right. I mean, the media definitely leans to the left, and they were pushing a narrative, thinking that it was going to go somewhere, and it's gone nowhere. It's not going to go anywhere. Maybe it ends in some sort of a financial settlement, but who cares?
Who cares? You know, this is. When Hillary Clinton got beaten in the primary by Obama and the Republicans said, we need a woman to run against Obama because everyone was voting for Hillary because she sits down to pee, I thought that was stupid, monochromatic thinking, just dumb. And the Democrats are doing the same thing in this. It's like, they destroyed Bill Clinton because he got a blowjob from Monica Lewinsky. So now if we prove Trump fucked a porn star, it'll be the same wave.
Doesn't matter.
No, it's not. No one cares. I don't care if he was. And his supporters sure as shit don't care. I mean, Clinton got in trouble because he was accused of lying under oath and then came up with my favorite defense ever. It depends on what your definition of is. You asked me, is there a sexual relationship between you and Monica Lewinsky? When you asked that, she was not at that time sucking my dick. Therefore, I told the truth. I'm sorry. I love that.
No one questions the gangsterness of William C. Clinton.
William J. Clinton.
J. Clinton, whatever.
William Jefferson Clinton.
That being said, that's kind of like my bleak outlook on November. I think it's going to be a day of reckoning for the Democratic Party. And at that point, you know, Republicans maintain control of the Senate. They,
don't lose the House. They're not going right. to lose the House, folks. I'm
right.
sorry. They're I wish. Ain't going to happen.
Right. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is if they really expand their lead in the Senate.
Maintain it or expand in the House, which I don't think they'll.
Right. I mean, I don't think they'll expand in the House, but there is a chance that they could theoretically expand in the Senate. You know, if they go four or five votes up in the Senate, then I mean it's a wrap. At that point, it's a wrap.
And game over.
Right.
Game over, man.
Game over, man.
Game over. The late great Bill Paxton.
Right.
Thank you very much. All right. We need to talk about local tragedies. It's not really a tragedy. LeBron left. We talked about LeBron and what would happen with him many, many times. I wrote about it on WhiskeyCongress.com. Check it mm-hmm. out. I called it the evolution of a hater. I admitted that when he left the first time, I was a hardcore hater. I cheered for Dallas to beat Miami, which they did. I cheered for Oklahoma City. I cheered for San Antonio. I did not want to see LeBron succeed because I was a bitter, angry fan. And I don't really apologize for that, but I do acknowledge that this, like I've said it many times to you and others, the way he left the first time was shitty. The way he came back was absolute perfection. By the end of this 4 years, it became pretty clear, unless they won a championship, he was not going to stay. The team was just not in a position to support him in a way that he could compete with the powers in the Western Conference.
Well, I think my take on this was, or is, even if they, knowing everything that I know now, even if they were somehow able, like, so let's say they win game one of
J.R. Smith doesn't.
Well, we don't need to rehash that shit.
Okay.
Let's say they win game one and it just completely destabilizes Golden State. And then, you know, maybe they lose game two, but then you know, they so they just let's say they, it plays out where there's a way that the Cavs figure out a way to win that series. I still think LeBron goes to LA because not only has he then fulfilled his promise of bringing a championship to Cleveland, but he's brought two. And what a way to leave is on a high note, right? Like just
that's,
like
that, I won that's two a fair, titles. That's a fair.
Because I think he was going no matter what. And I don't think it had as much to do with basketball. I think LeBron is a kid who grew up in Northeast Ohio, who at the time when he was growing up, the teams in Cleveland sucked. Right, I mean, sure. All the teams sucked.
I mean, he was a Yankee fan growing up.
Right, I mean, he was. I mean, but if you look at the how old he is, right? I mean, he's younger than I am. So his, he's 4 years.
He's 32 or 33. I forget.
Yeah, he's 32, I think. So I mean, he's 32. I'm 37. So he's 5 years younger than me. I think that you know when he was growing up, none of the teams in the he's from Akron, first of all, but and there's a big distinction between Cleveland and Akron, which I don't think gets enough attention. But when he
was, if you're not from here, you don't
right,
really
you don't,
know it.
You don't know
or
it.
You don't live here. You know
when it. when he was growing up, none of the teams were good, right? I mean, the Indians were maybe good, but he was a little young for the Indians to be, you know, to really process that. You know, when the Indians were at their best, but he grew up liking the teams like the Yankees and the Cowboys and. You know, we assume because he wears 23, it was probably the Bulls and Michael Jordan that he watched, that he loved, which I think he still might have been.
I don't think he'd be a basketball player of anyone from my age to his and not respect how great Michael Jordan was and want to be like Mike.
Right.
I'm
but
not
my,
a fan.
My point, my point being though, I think he wanted to be a Laker because he wanted to be in LA. He wanted to be a superstar. Bright lights. He wasn't going to go to New York and play for the Dolans there under any circumstances because that organization is just a fucking mess. And there was no other city that offered that. He went to Miami, and Miami's cool, but Miami's not really. He made Miami a sports town, right? Like, I mean, but it's not really.
Even then, did he? I mean, did he?
Right. I mean, but I mean, he made it relevant from a sports standpoint, and good teams in my like, you know, when the Hurricanes are good, that kind of does it. When the Dolphins are good, okay, kind of, but. Miami, because no one is from Miami, right?
Right.
Like, so, but in LA is just different because it's the late, because of Magic and Kareem and
Jerry
and,
West,
and,
right?
Michael
Jordan,
and Kobe, and Shaq. Right. But I mean, just the history of the yes. Lakers and superstardom and winning championships and just Hollywood. You know, he wants to make movies, he wants to be a multi-level star and be a billionaire and all that other shit. He just wants to be in LA, and I don't know if I could hold that against him.
I will say LA is a shitty sports town with the exception of the Lakers.
In USC.
Yeah. But, I mean, the Lakers especially, because being courtside at a Lakers game...
Who
I mean,
with,
Right. Jack Nicholson has been... Like
right, I mean,
hey, we're gonna zoom in on Jack now, and
right.
I mean, there's a thing in Entourage where like he wanted to Ari Gold, the you know super agent in Entourage, wanted to make sure his client got seen courtside at a Lakers game, and it is a status symbol in the most status driven city in the country,
right?
And so for LeBron, not that he needs more status, and he also by the way signed. A fairly substantial contract.
Yeah, 4 years, $154 million, which is crazy. But what's even crazier about it, which tells me that this wasn't about basketball, is he left $60 million on the table because
he
could have stayed
the
in
max
Cleveland.
Deal.
Right, the max deal was $220. So I mean, like that's crazy, right? How much did he leave? No, yeah, about $60
okay,
overall.
Whatever he could. That is crazy from the perspective of you and I and any normal person, but he. Well, first of all, he probably makes it up in.
Oh yeah, advertising. You know, I mean, he's got a lifetime deal with Nike. I mean, you know, the billion-dollar deal he signed with them, and then you know every other advertisement that he has, and then every other endeavor that he's, you know, who knows what he's invested in. You know, he made a shit ton of money off of the sale of Beats to Apple. You know, all that sort of shit. So he's got like, I mean, he's fine financially, but I think he just wanted to really. Live and feel that superstar life.
Yeah.
His family made the.
Right. I agree with you. He didn't get that in Miami. In Miami, it was cool. They wanted it. They did whatever, but he was not.
Right. Because Miami's a party city. Right. Miami is where stars go to party, but they're not there all the time, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, and then you get hurricane, everything else. Like, L.A. is where everybody is. Like, you're never not going to see stars in L.A. in certain places. And I just think he just said, you know what? That's the life that I want to live.
And when you said you can't blame him for that, either can I.
Right.
If I could go to dinner and there are people going to take pictures of me and tell you what steak I was eating every day, I think it'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, and here's the thing, you know, if I got into with a friend of mine and I said, listen, I would probably like I could easily see myself taking the exact same path that he took. You know, I mean, you get drafted by Cleveland and then you get a chance to leave because you grew up in Northeast Ohio. I would definitely go to Miami. Why wouldn't I, right? I mean, it's great down mm-hmm. there. The weather, the beaches, the women, and everything. Now, he was married, and he's been a good family man and everything else. But, I mean, we've never heard anything about LeBron.
He's never screwed up.
Right. I mean, we've never heard anything public, and he's been in the public eye a long time. And listen, Kobe was a tight ass, and Kobe screwed up.
Fair.
So, Michael was a tight ass, and Michael screwed up.
Derek Jeter is the best example of a guy who handles that. I mean, Derek Jeter was shortstop for the Yankees, which is the equivalent of being the star for the Lakers in
New York,
the respective sports, right? And Derek Jeter, like, was notorious, or not notorious, but famous for, like, he had a strict policy on how I'm protecting my image.
Right.
And if it would not shock me at all if LeBron has a similar, you know, Derek Jeter's not married, but
I mean, I don't want to go down that road. But what I am saying though is the idea of starting in your hometown, going down to Miami, coming back to your hometown, making a promise, delivering on that promise of winning a championship, and then saying, you know what, I have a finite amount of time left. I don't want to leave anything on the table. I've won championships. I literally have nothing else to prove. I don't need any more money from basketball. I'm going to make it a million other places. I'm still going to make a shit ton of money. I'm going to go to L.A. I'm going to be a rock star. I'm going to be a superstar out there I'm going to take advantage of it. I got a studio out there. My wife already spent more time this year than she did all years combined in L.A. My son wants to play with Pippen's kid and Kenyon Martin's kid and all these other kids, so my kids will be fine. I'm going out to L.A., and that's how I'm going to ride out my, you know, golden years as an NBA player. It's hard to fault him.
So in my evolution of a hater article, I basically said I was a hater. I loved the way he came back, and now I'm a fan. And I think my attitude on that is the prevailing one. Like, I was out with some friends the other day, and they were saying the next year they're going to cheer for the Cavaliers whenever they play Golden State. This was said in Rocky River, our favorite town to talk about whiteness.
So I guess for me, I'm a Cavs fan.
Me too.
I'm not rooting against. I won't root against LeBron.
When they're playing Golden State, I will be cheering for LA as if they were my team.
Right. I mean, and you know, I hold out hope that the Cavaliers can put something together and be competitive in the East, but I mean, that's probably not realistic. My interest will wane when the playoffs come.
Oh, sure.
You know,
after a 4-year run just nonstop, I mean, look, again.
But at this point, I'm cheering for everyone playing Golden State, right? I mean, like, I'm like, whether it's the Lakers or the Rockets or whoever,
right.
Like, I'm cheering. Like, I mean, right now the Rockets are the best team in a position to beat the Golden State Warriors. Then fine. I'll cheer for the Rockets at this point, just to not have to see Steph Curry in the finals.
I can get on board with that. All right. You ready for Come At Me, Bro?
I am.
You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Mine's basketball related.
Mine's not.
You want to?
Mine's a little bit serious, but it's not really. My come at me, bro, is, I don't know, man. I think global warming's kind of bullshit. I mean, it was dick cold, right? Just witch titty cold all winter. And then now it's as hot as Satan's asshole. I don't know. Maybe things are shifting because it's a planet that's a bajillion years old. And we don't understand it, and we would love to think that our ability to impact it is that big, but I mean, maybe at the end of the day, the earth just does what the earth does, and right now the earth is just trying to cook us. Like, just trying to cook us alive.
How would you like me to respond to that? About, you want me to talk about the man aspect of the environment, or the reality of environmental change?
I want you to acknowledge that this planet is old.
It is.
And we only know so much about it.
Fair.
And while man has an impact,
yes,
there are certain things that we actually don't have an impact over.
I don't know that I'll agree with we don't have an impact over. I will definitely say there are things that are not...
I mean, there are certain things that are beyond our control.
Yes, there are. Okay. To me, it's obvious that the environment, the climate has gotten more severe and disruptive over the course of my lifetime. I was just in Buffalo for the 4th of July. I could not walk across the sand on the beach without... I literally started to... turned around and walked back to the lake. Hold on.
You're only in your mid-40s. The earth is how many years old?
Understood.
So you have no idea what it was like fucking 200 years ago.
That is true.
Right?
I did not walk the beaches.
You didn't walk the beaches 100 years ago, so you don't know if that's true or not.
Well, I can say that when I grew up, every year...
Doesn't matter, but that's my point. It doesn't matter because that's such a myopic view given the age of the earth.
Okay.
Because it'll be here a long fucking time after we're gone.
Fine. Let's just keep it. Well, will it? It'll be here. Just don't know if there'll be people living on it in the way they do today. If you look, if you look at the fact that
I'm sure the dinosaurs thought they were still going to be here. I'm sure they had the same very conversation.
Well,
hello, Triceratops. What do you think we're going to be doing in a million
years?
Boy,
it's hot today.
I don't know. We'll be fine.
I mean the premise behind your comment is that we don't know if climate change is actually real, and if it's actually man-made. Is that a fair assessment of your...
No, honestly, my comment was just that I know during the winter, when basically the seasons shifted, right? I mean, the seasons almost shifted to where we didn't get anything even... I mean, we were still having warm days in December, January.
Right.
And, you know...
And then all of a sudden it was...
And it lasted all the way through May, and now all of a sudden I could literally melt cheese on the sidewalk, so...
So to me, that is an indicator of global of climate instability. We have called something the storm of the century at least 10 times in the last 5 years. You can't have a storm of the century multiple times in a year. You can't.
I get that, but I just
and
while
whether it was man-made, I can get into that, and I'm...
You can, but at the same time, you just don't really know.
I am not a climate scientist. I am a believer that we have done a really poor job as a world and really as a country in trying to stem the things that climate scientists believe are tilting the environment in the wrong direction or the climate in the wrong direction. And it greatly concerns me.
That's fair.
And
that's fair. And listen, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't fucking know. I don't. Environment's not my thing. Hot, cold. That's summer
and
spring football season.
Kind of flipping back to your point earlier, you said something about or we talked about. I was going to say you. We talked about how the conversation gets distracted, right? So left leaning progressives say environmental change and climate change is a huge problem, and then the response is, Al Gore made that shit up to make more money. That is such a myopic, stupid argument in return. Right. I mean, that's a flat earth level stupid argument.
Why are we bringing Al Gore into this?
It happens to this
day.
I know.
It's just
ridiculous.
But when it does, it's just like, are you serious?
So Mike Wood sent me a text today with a picture of the temperature out from his car.
110?
124 in Arizona. 124 fucking degrees.
Get your car to the sun, Mike.
Yeah, well, that's not the answer. The answer is let's not fucking... All right.
I know. It's so fucking hot. My God.
When we were in Vegas, it was... I want to say it got around 120.
No. No, it did not.
Well, whatever it was. It was 110, maybe.
No.
It was hot.
It was, I think it was like 103 was the hottest day.
And I mean, I always say that I hate talking about you know, Mike without him being on the phone to talk with us. But one thing, he and I had a conversation a while ago, and I said, when I was in Vegas, I nearly killed myself with drinking and dehydration. And his response was, that's because you're a fucking idiot. And I said, you're absolutely right. I didn't argue that point for a second. I was a fucking idiot. But I damn near killed myself. And God, Vegas, man. Booze, Topgolf, vodka, and dehydration nearly ended me. Can I move on to Michael at me, bro?
Yes.
All right. We just talked about what will the Cavaliers do. I'm not suggesting this is a possibility or a likelihood, whatever. But Kyrie Irving is still a free agent. If Kyrie Irving were to come back to Cleveland and try to be the... Try to be the savior of the Cavaliers for the second time. Obviously, it would be a good thing for Cleveland. Obviously, he's not going to do that. How do you think he'd be received in Cleveland?
I mean, considering he said that when he was in Boston, he was finally in a real sports town, I don't think his reception would be good initially. He would have to come in and light it up. Now, he's capable of doing that, but the chances, I mean, okay, not talking about probability.
Again, I'm not... Would you want that? Of course you would. Is it likely? Of course it's not. But how would it be received question.
The reception would... I think the initial reception would be cold as ice until they started winning. And there's no guarantee of that because we've seen him as a one-man show before and it wasn't good. And his team is kind of currently configured to play with LeBron. But that... I mean, some of those pieces have fallen apart and signed other places. So... this team's in a weird state of limbo right now. So,
agreed.
You know, I don't know. I think it would be cold as a witch's titty until they started racking off wins.
So both of our Come At Me Bros involved the phrase cold as a witch's titty.
Yeah.
That's a first for Whiskey Congress.
By design.
But well played, sir. All right. You ready to wrap this up?
Wrap it up, B.
All right. So thanks again, Riley, for the Basil Hayden Dark Rye. Really good stuff. I've been throwing it down way more than I thought I should.
Yep.
Happy birthday, America, even though it happened a few days ago.
America.
Fuck yeah. No better way to finish. Good talking to you, man.
Yep.